Afternoon, Rex.
Hi, how are you? Good
afternoon, Ted.
Good afternoon.
Series 2,
Episode 4. Right. Eid Mubarak, everyone.
Yeah, indeed.
Eid Mubarak.
Who's at Captain's Table today?
Well, it's a great day, like all Captain's Tables are. But I met this gentleman about 15 years ago when he was fighting in white collar boxing. Was it 2008?
Yeah.
When my wife was also fighting.
That's right.
And
not each other.
And we've been in touch pretty much ever since. Lots of different projects of different things.
Yeah.
You've gone away. You've come back.
Yeah.
But now we're going to have a talk about it. So Naz Musa, welcome to the Captain's Table.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. No, it's going to be, I mean, you've done so much. And as we said, you know, the Captain's Table, how we work, we want to hear a little bit. It's all based around Dubai to start off. But, you know, we want to hear where you came from, how it's all worked in. You've obviously gone away, come back, gone away, come back.
Yeah.
So why don't we start at the beginning?
Well, yeah, what makes Naz tick?
Yeah.
Well, start at the beginning. Born in the Sudan.
Right.
How's that? And exactly in 4 days' time, 50 years ago, born in the Sudan. And my mum and dad immigrated to the UK when I was 2. And then I followed when I was 4. I grew up in the UK, north of England, Blackpool. Which I don't know if you know Blackpool, it's not great.
It's Lancashire.
Yeah.
And it's lit up at night. What more do you want?
Yeah. We've got a few Blackpool viewers, by the way.
I'm from Blackpool, I can say it. No one else can say
it. Oh, that's true. That's true. Good.
When you say lit up, I think you mean the illuminations, and they're really disappointing when you go as an adult. But anyway. And then I went to university in the northeast in Hull, and at university I got the chance to spend a year studying in Denmark. And it gave me a bit of a bug for travel and a bug for the international life. So after uni, I joined a UK tour operator called Air Tours on their graduate training scheme. And I was sent to Magaluf in Mallorca.
Nice.
Yeah, Blackpool, Hull, Magaluf. It's getting better all the time, right?
Every step is a notch up.
And I had a year there, which is not for this podcast. It's a podcast by itself. And then after that, instead of going back to the head office, they asked me to go to Jamaica for 2 years, which isn't Magaluf. So I went to Jamaica. I was there for 2 years, Montego Bay, Orcharias, Negril.
And always in the travel industry?
Always with Air Tours, a tour operator. And I was the manager for the island, in the 3 resorts on the island. And then I kind of made a decision that I'm either going to be that old, getting bigger, fatter, getting less hair, rep, who's going to be in Jamaica for the rest of his life, or I'm going to build a career and travel. I chose to come back to UK, joined a small business, a company called Holiday Autos in the UK, that we worked hard and grew to a bigger and bigger business, and became a director of that business. And we sold that business in 2003 to lastminute.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then had a couple of years at lastminute.com, and that business sold to Travelocity in the States.
Huh?
And at that point, I came to Dubai on holiday. 2005,
right.
New money holiday, right? Borja Arab, suite for a week, ridiculousness.
And 2005, it was just starting to kick, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was fun, but I just fell in love. I mean, I've been on business from 97, 98, in and out of Dubai, but I just thought this is the place to want to live. And so we did. We quit last minute, came here, set up a JV with their group here in 2005, July 2005, and moved to Dubai. And then that business did all right, exited that, and another one, and another one, and kind of that's my life has been business, start, grow, sell, business, start, grow, fail.
Up to that point
was travel. And then 2006, myself and a friend, Leo Futrell, who you might know, has been in the country for many, many years, set up Gulf Reps, which is a travel PR business that's still going really strong now, run by my brother, Sammy. I joined the, I was an investor in Blue Banana, if you remember Blue Banana.
Do you remember Blue Banana, yeah.
So I was heavily invested in that when the founder ran away to the UK and I came back to clean up some of that mess. And then.
So, I mean, what I can see is that you're not averse to failure or you know, worrying about it. You know, things work brilliantly, sometimes they don't, but it doesn't put you off. And so you're a serial entrepreneur.
You've got to fail. If you haven't failed,
yeah,
then I'm not sure you are an entrepreneur. I think you just lucked out and got a semi not corporate job.
That's interesting.
Look, unless you've lost sleep over not paying salary or not being able to pay salary and you've like managed to scrape it together with an hour to go, I don't know, man. I don't think you've done it. And that's the problem with entrepreneurism, I think. Mm. And that's why it's not for most people. It's tough, man. It's lonely, it's difficult, it's emotional, and it's full of massive highs and massive lows and not that much in between.
Right.
And you have to be that kind of, character to just survive and lose all your hair maybe and get greyer if you did have hair and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you have to be quite robust.
Yeah. Look, it's lonely, it's awful. You don't want to... Entrepreneurs... I'm going to say entrepreneurs, but definitely me, we've got massive egos. Boxing is about ego. Mm. We've got massive egos. And you, every time you start something, you put your ego on the line.
Mm-hmm.
And if it fails, it hurts. Of course it hurts. You can't show anybody that, though, because you've got to be that ego on yourself.
You have to roll with the punches, pardon the term.
Yeah.
Which you did. Yeah. Which you did in 2006. You took it on yourself. That was quite a gutsy thing to do. When you actually took winning the ring yourself.
The boxing, yeah. I did that for a couple of reasons. Without going overly, you know, sentimental, boxing saved my life. I was 123 kilos. And I went on a business trip to Saudi Arabia. And I came back and I couldn't hydrate on the plane. And I was drinking pint after pint of water. And I came, went to the doctors. And then he basically said to me, "Hey, you're diabetic."
Oh.
And I was like, "Oh, well, that's disappointing.
Yeah.
What do I do about it?" And he said, "Well," he said, "you could do a couple of things. You do nothing, and then you'll have an awesome 10, 12 years like your life is now, but then you'll probably die. Or you can, you have to lose like 40 kilos. I'd rather not die, so here we go. So and then I tried running, I tried swimming, I tried the gym, and I'm just nothing motivated me. I wasn't interested in it. You run, you forget to breathe, and your mind goes a million places, and you swim, and all that. So and then a friend said, "You should try boxing." So I went to a gym.
A gym here?
Here in Old Coast, dirty gym in Old Coast.
Yeah.
And walked in, and there was a young kid at the time, a guy called Richie Comey, who's a really good friend, who's now ex-IBF world title holder, and he's going to win it again.
This wasn't Zach's one, was it?
It was Zach's
one. Oh, right. Yeah.
I loved it. And the thing about boxing is that if you switch off, someone punches you in the face, right? So you have to be on. You have to think of nothing else than what you're doing. At that time, it was, I can't skip, right? Or you know what I mean? I can't throw a punch, I can't, nothing. But, you know, it was awesome. And then what I thought to myself was, this is fun and a little bit scary, but not enough to make me really lean in. So I applied to, what's the chap's name? Romeo Wilson.
Johnny Marmia.
Yeah,
yep.
Johnny.
Yep.
I said, "Dude, I want to do the white collar," which was in June.
Mm-hmm.
I lost the weight. I fought a Kiwi, mate. I remember it. Lost all that weight. Learned to white collar box, which is big gloves. Hell, kid.
How long did that take? 6 months? Year? Over?
No, February the 4th until June the 6th.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah. And then... And that's the fear, right? So then what happens then is you wake up at 6 a.m., you train every day, twice a day, you take a Friday off, you don't eat chips anymore, you lay off the booze, you do all the right things, and then you fight. But even after all that, it's your ego. You're stepping in. It was at the Haptor Grand.
That's right, yeah.
800, 900. I'll never forget it. Goosebumps right now, you think about it. Because I watched the first fight with a few of the tables that we had watching.
What was your song that you came out?
I was just going to say, what was your walk-on?
Yeah. It was Sean Paul, We Be Blazing. So whatever I was listening to when I was training, right? And my boxing name was Brown Sugar. Tom Urquhart to shout that out.
Yeah.
But the first couple of fights were everyone's having their smoke salmon and champagne. Everyone's having some lovely black tie event. But I got a bit nervous because you see the fires, think, oh God, I have to do that. And then about, I went up, that would have been about half six, seven, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then my fight was at, it's got to be half 10, 11, I think, by the time we came down. And they've been drinking solidly for all that time. So now their bow ties are around the heads and people are on tables. And they're like, kill him. And I'm like, oh my God, where is this? And you could smoke inside of those guys, right? So I was like, this is horrific. What are you doing now? Do you know what I felt? Then I got hooked. And I stayed boxing ever since, and developed one of my businesses around here. And but you know, if I hadn't, I probably wouldn't be sat here. Right? If I had just carried on with my lifestyle, I wouldn't be sat here. And boxing changed my life, and eventually, a few years later, has sort of re-entered my life in different ways.
Right, and so that's one part of your business, but it's taken you to other places outside of Dubai, right? Because we were just talking earlier on, and very successfully, I might add.
I mean, the boxing, I carried on boxing, I stayed really close to Richie, and then I was part of the team at Go Nabit, which was a really quick, sort of, it was a daily deals business, launched, sold within a year almost, a couple of great founders. And they asked me to come on and build a travel business for them, which I did. And then on that exit, the acquirer, Living Social, asked me to go to Singapore to help them integrate all the travel businesses they'd acquired in Asia, and then eventually to become the CEO for Asia. So my then girlfriend, now wife, and I moved across to Singapore in 2012. Had a really good 4 years there. After 3 years, we sold Living Social. My wife had a senior role with American Express. So in my mind, I was going to just sit and get a little bit fatter again. But I was still boxing. I was still training. And after a while, Alex said to me that sitting around and not working wasn't something that was going to be acceptable. So I remember it really well. I was in Sydney. I placed a little bit of money in a small business in Sydney, and I'd been down there, and they put me up in this awful hotel that's in here. Well, with all respect to this particular brand, I don't know if I'd say it or not, but this small brand hotel by the airport. And I was sitting there, and I was calling her at 11 o'clock in the house and moaning about how bad this hotel was. And she said, just do what you want to do. You're moaning. It's 11 o'clock at night. I just want to go to bed. See you tomorrow when you fly back. Do what you need to do. What do you want to do? I said, well, I want to open a boxing gym. And she said, do it, but it's a business. You're a businessman. Do it as a business, and you've got my full support. 6 months, you have to break even. That's aggressive. But if you do it as a business, fine. If you're doing it as a passion play, I'm not interested in hearing more about it.
Right.
I waste your money. And that night, I went on Facebook and I created a page for a fake boxing gym called East Coast Boxing on the East Coast, Singapore, where we were living in Jucha. And I said, and then I lit up an advert to that page. I just downloaded photos from Google, right, of pretty people boxing. It's nothing to do with boxing. And then I put an advert out, new East Coast boxing gym opening East Coast Singapore. If you're interested in learning more, like. And then that like was had a built-in sort of like page where you could add your name and address and all that, or email address. And I put $20 a day for 7 days. So I put $140 worth of marketing behind it. And I went to bed. And in my head, I said, if I can get 100 likes, I'll turn 50 of those likes into members. And in my five packet maths, I can have my own gym. Awesome. And I'm my own gym. And I don't have to pay a trainer, I just have my own gym. And I said, I need to get 100 likes in a week. And I went to bed and I woke up with more than 100 likes. And within 3 days, about 500 likes. And then I stopped the advertising. I thought there's no point in spending the other, whatever it was, $70 or $80. And that was it. And then I had to really open a gym then. So I found an location.
Something quickly on the East Coast.
Found somewhere around the corner. And then I teased it out a bit over the next month or two. And then in October 2014, we opened the first Spartans. We broke even 3 months, not 6 months. The model was loved by the community. It's really our community's gyms. And then we grew them. And we now have 10. We have 10 in Singapore. And we're about to. End of the summer, we'll open our first here.
So when you say community gym, in comparison to, I don't know, traditional, what does that mean?
So I've trained in a lot of places, in a lot of countries, and I've loved certain things about every gym I've been in, and I've seen where gyms have failed. And there was no, even in Singapore, you go into some gyms and they're fight gyms, and they feel like a fight gym.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like a fight, so I'm all right. I quite like that, but yeah. I could see why 99% who don't like a fight wouldn't like it.
Yeah,
so you go just... and you can smell the blood, you can see the blood, you can
yeah,
see
right.
people beating the life out of each other who are in a fight team, let's say, in the ring. You know, you see overly, just you don't see yourself, you see other. And then I've been in other gyms where it's boxer size and there's music and da-da-da, and it just feels like, you know, I might as well be dancing. So
yeah, right.
And there was... And then there's some gyms I've been in where they know you straight away, and other gyms where everything's a bit aloof and you don't know. And et cetera, et cetera. So I just thought, I'm going to have a gym that has all the things that I love about training and boxing.
Mm-hmm.
For myself, I'm a very selfish man, guys. And most of it was driven by the fact that it was 100 meters from my house. And,
yeah.
And so that's what I did. Mm. Our receptionist in the condo we were living in before we moved into the house on the East Coast in Singapore, every time my mates would come to Singapore, she'd remember their name on the first day. And they'd be, oh, James, how are you? Stace, how are you? And I thought, that's awesome. So I called her and said, why don't you come and be our receptionist? So she left the condo, came there.
Mm-hmm.
My trainer, I loved the way he trained, brought him in. We segmented when fighters train to when beginners train to when ladies train to when kids train, so that you're in a gym
with your peer group.
You're with people, and you can be a beginner, then you can move up to intermediate, to advanced, to fight team if you are that 1%, 2% want to fight. But you never get exposed to the brutality of another level other than your own, or the mediocrity if you are a fighter and you're seeing, you know. So we have 37 different classes. Our timings work that allow us to do that. Alex was, she had just given birth to Harris, our eldest son, and she wanted to regain her core. So we had this Wednesday 11 a.m. class called Punchy Mums. So for three months. It's an awesome class. So three months after they've had the baby, they want to start regaining their core. So we'd have classes where they could bring the baby, and we'd have nannies that would look after the baby. And the first, you know, in the first gym, it was in like the weights room, which is, I mean, like health and safety would have gone nuts, but a bit more advanced now. And they're the best class. Everybody turned up. Yeah. Difficult to make them leave because they haven't spoken to an adult in 3 months.
Sure,
right? And it was all
and
about...
And they can let a bit of aggression out.
Absolutely. And all about... regaining your core. And then we've got kids classes, and we've got corporate classes, and we've got a lot of things that go on, and then we grew it the second, third, fourth, and now we have 10 gyms in Singapore.
So this will be, when it comes here, this will be the same model.
Exactly the
same. Yeah.
And have you got a site yet?
I have, but I'm not going to talk about it yet.
Fine. Ooh. Absolutely.
But what it is it's very simple. The reason it became a business was because it's not a 5,000 meter square gym or 2,000 meter square gym with you know, this and that. You're boxing. At the end of a boxing session, you just want to go home, maybe cry a little, right? Because it's so tough. It's so cardiovascular. It's so difficult.
Yeah.
And if you fight, it's so, you know, soul-crushingly devastating or incredibly high-inducing. So you don't want to hang around most of the time. You want to go home, right? So it's got showers, it's got whatever else. But you want bags on a rack so you can pull the bags back and use the ring. And you want a ring, and you want the rings front and center so everyone can see it. And the first time you see someone step into that ring, even just a skip, that you can see this sort of little pop, right? The shoulders pop, and they feel great about it.
Yeah.
I love it, right? And so because of that, you have 3,000 square feet. Means you can break even with 80 or 90 members. You don't have to have 500-600 members.
And so, say for example, reassuringly middle-aged people like Hamo and myself, if we came along and said, right, we fancy giving that a go.
Yeah.
From start to being in the ring and boxing, or probably having a trainer and you're hitting the gloves or whatever.
Hitting the gloves first day.
From the first day.
Yeah,
so that's what I'm trying to get to. I'm going to say, you're up and running pretty much from the word go.
You'll try and skip, and you won't be able to skip.
Yeah.
And then you'll do some body work, like whatever, you know, sit-ups, push-ups, whatever it might be, in the first half an hour. And then you'll have some gloves on, and you'll be punching pads, or maybe a bag. We don't let people in the we let people in the ring to punch pants, but we don't let people in the ring to punch each other.
Absolutely.
Until we and all of our coaches are comfortable that they can defend themselves and they can and they're not going to get hurt. It became really apparent as well very quickly with the second gym, really, that the most important thing is that you want to be able to walk into a Spartans and feel exactly the same way about the class you've just taken.
Mm-hmm.
So we started the Spartans Academy, which is all of our trainers for all of the gyms go through that first, so we have a uniformity. And I want to be in a position where in Singapore, one of the members in Singapore can come on business here and jump into one of our gyms here and
right.
have the same
very
experience.
Good. Consistency.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's important, right? You'd be punching pads, and then you'll sit down a lot after that for a minute. You'll have to sit down for a while.
I mean,
I'll be there when you do that first.
As you say, and I think there's probably every chance that we will do it, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I remember when we were doing because I'd go down to the trainings in the mornings.
There's nothing like it.
And when you see someone's shoulders pop, I can already, just you talking about that, I can feel about the rush of adrenaline that you get.
Mate, it's unreal. It's unreal. I mean, fighting is horrible. There's no ifs or buts about it. Up until the second the first bell rings, it's awful. It's just horrific. It's just the worst. Like I'm an adult and I'm crying. Like, what am I doing here? God's sake. And then you step in and the bell rings and you just, like, I don't know what it is. You just, like, all you hear is your own breathing and the other dude's breathing. And you just feel like a sort of peace until somebody punches you and it's a bit less peaceful. But still, it's okay. And then the final bell rings, if you've all made it through, and then you're a god. You just, you know what I mean? Zeus, every adrenaline is pumped through your body and everyone thinks you're a rock star. For an ego like mine, phenomenal.
I'm ready.
That's great.
So, I don't know if you see it. Have you got a rough idea of a date, Stanley?
Yeah, I'm thinking we're going to probably open end of August, I would say.
Wow.
Pretty soon. Yeah.
Great.
Back end of the summer. Brilliant.
People will go home or we'll do something in the summer and we'll be ready for them when they come home. And then we have a plan to have 65 gyms by the end of 2022. So, we're going to grow this and we're going to go hard.
Good luck with that.
This is between Singapore, between Asia and here.
Okay.
We've actually had some interest out of Australia as well, but you know what? Once again, it's very tempting to lean in but I just hear Alex, not a passion play.
Right.
So my business head is on and we're not going to spread ourselves too thin.
Mm.
I'm here now, got an awesome MD in Australia, Singapore, Australian guy called Russ, who's driving stuff over there. Between us, we'll grow here, grow Asia. We might lean into Australia if we get the right partners.
Right.
Yeah. And then we're, you know, look out for some white collar stuff, look out for some.
Yeah.
You know, some,
it's been a while since black collar's been
white collar.
white collar because. Well, obviously because of COVID and not wanting people together, but I'm sure that's not too far away with a bit of luck in the next 12 months or so.
It's a great introduction. It's a great introduction to boxing. It's a great introduction to people who want to get fit again.
Mm.
It changed my life. There's no ifs, there's no buts, it changed my life.
Mm. No, that's brilliant.
Where did the name come from?
Brown Sugar.
No.
Oh.
Spine.
Oh, that was Facebook. Once again, everything I did was on his Facebook market research, basically. So after the quick realization that I needed to now open a gym, because all these people thought I was going to open one, first was find the location, and then I teased that out for a bit, and then it was like I did a competition with the 700 or 800 that now liked it, named the gym. I knew I wanted to call it Spartans.
Wasn't there a movie around that time too?
Was, but I just thought, in my eyes, I saw the logo before I saw the name, so I thought
sure.
And I just needed somebody in the 700 people who were now liked the fake East Coast boxing gym. Someone to choose it, and a gentleman chose it, and he won, I don't know, 6 months of membership or something.
Mm-hmm.
And we called it Spartans, so that's where the name came from. Yeah.
Is there a website?
Yeah, SpartansBoxing.com.
SpartansBoxing.com.
Yeah.
Or we'll hashtag that one.
We'll put that on the page too. That's great.
Yeah. Excited about that.
Yeah. No, we'll be following that one for sure. Now, can we talk briefly about math?
Math, yeah, of course.
And Mr. Dr. Phil Maffetone.
Yeah.
So
just as a lead in from our limited experience of weight loss with a certain guy called David Labouchere, who started telling us about math training. And for those listeners or viewers, in simple terms, it's just basically operating at a best level to be able to lose fat. But that's just the lead-in, but I'll let you
maximum
take it off.
Yeah. Aerobic function, right? So that's where you are. And so it was founded by a guy in the States called Dr. Phil Maffetone in the 70s. He was a collegiate track runner, and he's a doctor, a medical doctor. And he started to train himself using a formula to calculate a heart rate that was optimum to burn fat as opposed to burn carbs. Our bodies are built to run, walk 600 miles with the fat that is in our body. You don't have to have a banana and you don't have to carb up, you don't have to do all that. The body allows you to do that, but over time, our lifestyles have changed all that. And about, when would it have been? About when I first went to Australia, it's probably 2015-16, and a fellow investor of mine, a guy called Dr. Phil Wing, had used Phil Maffetone's math method to train for a 1,000-kilometer charity cycle ride he was doing between Sydney and Queensland. And it worked. It's soft on his sort of his knees and on his body, and he trained better. He got better at his cycle. He got better at his times and everything.
Because you're just running slower.
Because you initially you're running slower.
Yeah.
Then because that's what your heart rate allows you to do. But then your heart rate then allows you to get faster and faster and faster at the same heart rate, and so you're putting less and less pressure on all your joints. So. Phil and I chatted, and Phil went to the States and basically bought the IP for Dr. Phil Maffetone, and we work with Phil now, and we've created a whole sort of fitness ecosystem around the methodology. So we have philmaffetone.com is the website. We have nutrition on there. We have these HR Plus headphones, which are headphones that allow you to listen to your music or your podcast or whatever you're doing, but they also measure your heart rate through your ear canal. So you don't have to have a chest strap and a this and a that. You just have these earphones that measure your heart rate through there. We have an app. We have a sort of this sort of mix of health and wellness product that's centered around math fitness. We have a vitamin range which are vegan and no synthetic fillings, so no chemicals in there at all, completely freeze-dried fruit and vegetables, so they're the right dose. You know, if you take a vitamin C pill and if you look at the pack, it'll tell you it's 1,000 times than the amount of vitamin C you need for the day. Now, that sounds great. It sounds like you're getting all the vitamin C and a bit more, but it's not good for your body. That's the first thing. And the second thing is it's full of fillers and colors and all this kind of stuff. But we don't. We use, you know, fruit and vegetables, and we use the right dosage, and it's fruit and vegetables as opposed to chemicals. So we've got a vitamin range. We've actually recently launched a whole educational program and certification program to allow personal trainers to learn the math method and then train others and get certified and then have some continual development every year. We've got a web series, a webcast series on with various professional and elite amateur athletes talking about the method and all of that. So we've got this whole ecosystem around math fitness. And then Phil Maffetone himself is a, you know, a cool cat based out of the States who was Johnny Cash's personal trainer and Rick Ross's and this and that. And he's a very interesting man.
Yeah.
Who you'd imagine wouldn't enjoy a drink, but he's all right with it, actually.
So he's actually human?
Yeah. Less than we are, but he's human.
I'm kind of with you on that.
Yeah.
And essentially, I mean, in my simple knowledge of it, it's just that you're burning fat more efficiently as opposed to sugars, right? If you have a higher heart rate, yeah.
As opposed to carbs. So teaching your body to burn fat, not carbs.
And
the more you can do that,
yeah.
the healthier you'll be. Yeah. And the lower your resting heart rate, we talked about resting heart rate.
Yeah, yeah.
The lower your resting heart rate, the lower your exercising heart rate is, you'll start and you won't be able to run. You'll have to walk slowly to keep it within the limit. But then gradually you'll jog a little bit and stay the same. And you'll, so if you have it on a fixed loop, if you're on a 2K loop, for example, the first time might take you an hour to walk, right? But then eventually, using the same heart rate, you'll be able to run it, jog it, run it, running faster at the same heart rate.
Yeah.
And that's how it works. And that's why Mark Allen, you know, world Ironman champion, and all these elite athletes use the MAF method, because it took them backwards to go forwards again, but it took them forwards.
I remember also one time we were talking about the machine that's being developed to actually measure the difference. Is that coming? Or?
Yeah. So we are. So about 4 or 5 years ago now, I was in Melbourne with Phil Wynn, and we started to talk about the clinical uses of the science around MAF. And Phil had a doctor friend at Monash University, Dr. Jeff, I can't remember his surname. And we asked him to basically build us some form of meter in order to take your breath and measure your respiratory quotient, the amount of fat you're burning your carbs with it. So he went away, did a little science, and came back with a Bunnings fishing tackle box, some cardboard sort of maze inside it, a computer chip, a computer screen, and then this blowing thing. And then we blew into it, or I blew into it as a diabetic, knowing exactly what my, you know, my fat burning, carb burning, ketonic state is at most times of my life. And it got it within 5% of the clinical machine that is $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 in any hospital in the world. So something here. So we've now taken that science forward, and we're now in China, in the process, about to press the button on producing these clinical devices. Now, we've got approval to sell them to me and you, as, you know, what they call mammals, middle-aged men on people who spend $8,000, $9,000, $2,000 on a bike. You could probably pick up one of these machines for $500 or $600, right? And that will, at any given point, allow you to breathe into it and see if you are truly training your body to burn fat instead of carbs. The clinical opportunity, once you get FDA approval, is then to take that to hospitals all around the world. Instead of having one in ICU for $100,000, you could have 10 around the hospital for $50,000, right? And so that's the next stage of it, and we're currently fundraising. And he's interested to reach out to take it to that next level. So that's MAF clinical, our clinical opportunity. And then, but that's what we've talked about in the last 5 minutes is, you know, some big bloke getting off the sofa for the first time and walking 1 kilometer, right up to A&E grade equipment, all in the space of MAF fitness and all in the space of Dr. Phil Mafton and his methodology. It's been successful, and we're working closely with him to make it even more so.
Very interesting.
No, MAF is brilliant, but to physically be able to do that testing regularly and say, hold on, this is actually working.
Yeah. Just imagine every gym in the world, right? You join the gym.
Yeah.
They say, give us £5, I'll blow in here, and in a month's time, I'll show you burning fat, not carbs. And then a month later, blow again. You've got a gym member for life.
Yeah, exactly.
As long as you've trained them well, as long as you've done your job, as long as you're not, you know.
Yeah. So I think Spartan Boxing Gym will have a few.
So MAF training I've trained MAF fitness with Spartan and with boxing. Sorry, it's kind of tough. Try to keep your heart rate down in boxing, mate. That's adrenaline more than anything else, but it's doable. On a bag, you just do it on a bag, and you try and come down, and then slow down, and then go on the bag again, and then slow down, and go on the bag again. So it is absolutely doable. But people swim with it, they run with it, you cycle with it.
Yeah,
people, you know, every form of fitness.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant, and He travels quite a bit, Dr. Phil, doesn't he? So he may come to Dubai one day soon.
You know, he was here, man. He was here 18 months ago, I guess, before this madness started. We had a good meet, him and Phil Wing. Had a good few days together here. Obviously, the madness has kept us on the ground for a while. Sure. But when we're all up and running again, yeah, he'll be here.
Perfect.
He'll be here.
So a big part of the podcast of what we do is, and you're a perfect individual. You've come here, you've gone away, now you're back again.
Yeah.
What is it about Dubai that made you come back, and where do you see Dubai going in the next 5 to 10 years?
So we were sat in Sydney, my wife and I, both from the UK, trying to decide where to call home. We have some property, but we didn't have a home. You know, we were renting a nice house in Singapore. We were renting a beautiful house in Sydney, but none of them were ours. And you know, you've got, you know, name brand, non-name brand furniture and rubbish knives and forks and no decent plates. So we said, right, listen, wherever we go next has to be home. And we had a good period of time having that conversation. Do we go to the UK? Do we lean in and try and go to New York with Amex? Alex is, you know, was with American Express at the time. And we both loved our time in Dubai. Loved it. And said, why wouldn't we call Dubai home? Not come to Dubai, I'm going to be here for a few years, and who knows. And we're going to go back home, but home is the UK. And I don't come to Dubai and call it home is a such a different mindset.
Yeah.
So that's what we did. We said, okay, let's cut. So we in the first of the 2 years we're there, sort of 18 months in, Alex and I came over, we spent a week and we did a recce of, because you know how Dubai changes, like we've been over for 5 years. It was a very different city, clearly. And we'd been coming and going on holiday, but that's different. So we chose where we wanted to live, we chose where we wanted to buy a house. We said, let's lean in straight away. You know, don't if you're gonna lean in, if you're gonna call this home, buy a home. We did all of that. We moved into the ranches, found a school for our kids, bought a house, got nice furniture, got good knives and forks in place. And it's liberating. You just thought, well, this is now home. We are close enough to family, heaven forbid anything needs us to get there.
Absolutely.
We love the fact that the sun always shines. And I don't care if it's too hot in July and August. Love it. Absolutely love it. It works for me, my entrepreneurial lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, it's still, Dubai has its big problems in terms of entrepreneurial growth. But compared to when I first started this journey in 2005, oh my gosh, chalk and cheese.
From my perspective, not that it's about me, but I've always seen as Dubai as a place that things come across your desk more easily and readily than they would do if you were in London, if you were in Sydney, if you were in New York or something. It's a smaller community, but you're closer to the action.
Yeah, and there's something about it. If you looked at the governance to set up a business and all the things, you could set up a business in Singapore in 5 minutes with $100 online. Boom. That isn't the case in Dubai, right? It just isn't the case. But despite even that, there's something about it. It still feels a little bit early in its development, which gives everybody the chance to be part of that development. I felt it in 97 when I first came in business, in 2005 when I first moved here. Every journey when we were in Singapore and Sydney when we came through here, and when we moved here. And, you know, I've had businesses that have failed spectacularly in Dubai. And I've had businesses that have been pretty good success stories in Dubai. And nothing has changed my mind. Nothing. I want there to be something. Because then I could be, you know, but I don't. There's nothing. I love living here. I love the fact that my kids are safe. I love the fact that, you know, we own a home here. And we're able to build a network. And the people who we left behind in 2005, 2006, 2012, and 2016... most of them are still here. Most of our mates are still here. They might come and think, I'm here for a year or 2 years, but they're still here.
Well, they might have gone away and come back.
Yes, a number have.
It's quite funny. Pretty much every conversation we have, when people say, well, I came here thinking it'd be a couple of years, and then off we go.
Yeah.
I'll be somewhere else, or I'll return. Yeah. And to a man or woman, that they've all said a couple of years. And how long have you been here for? 18 years, 20 years, 22 years?
Yeah.
That's very amazing.
It's quite liberating to come and just say, this is now home.
Yeah.
Who knows? Heaven forbid something happens to our families later on in life. We want to spend a bit more time in the UK, or you know, my mum spends the time between here and Sudan and the UK, wherever it might be. you know, those decisions come at that time. Right now, this is how, and it's liberating to think like that. You build relationships better. You focus on work differently. You know, there's less time for politics and getting angry about silly things. And so that's why we came back to Dubai. And Dubai, you know, Dubai from '97 when I first came, it was the old airport, and I stayed in the Avari Hotel and by the clock tower in Deira, thinking I was in this place is so cool. to now,
yeah.
I mean, the journey's been incredible,
exactly.
And it's just starting.
I think it is.
It's starting in so many ways. You know, Expo, you know, got its little, you know, punch in the nose last year, but that's probably a good thing to happen, if I'm really honest. It opens up this year and opens up Dubai even more. Some of the sort of the decisions this country has made in the pandemic have been the kind of decision you'd make if you ran a business.
Sure.
And they're not easy decisions, they're painful decisions, but they're most of the time they're right. And in fact, every decision you make is right. It's only time will prove you wrong. But at the moment you make it, it's the right decision. And look, we're open. And I know we've got our challenges with the UK now, but there's nowhere on this planet I'd rather have been in the last 12 or 18 months than here.
I agree.
Brilliant. No, great. Well, Naz, thank you so much for coming on today.
No, what a ending on a good note as well, a strong note with, you know, things to look forward to.
And we're going to be listening and waiting for this gym opens.
Very much so.
We'll be pulling on the gloves.
Well, you guys come to a podcast from in the middle of the ring.
You got it.
We'll do that.
That's a deal. Team, can we organise that?
100%.
Very good. Right. Very good.
Thank you for having
Thanks for coming to the table, Naz.
So just before we go, we are now week two in the Salad Jar Challenge. Ted, Rex, how are we all going?
I'm just a shade under 6 kgs lighter.
That's brilliant. I'm 7 kgs lighter. Ted?
One kg.
Well, you started off on a pretty low base, so that's okay. But yeah,
we've got far more to lose, Ted, I think. So anyway, and we'll keep it going and we'll let you know how we're doing. But thanks again to Ian O'Han.
Exactly.
And to Salad Jar, because it's been actually just the kind of kickstart that I needed.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and we all need it. Yeah, so great.
All right, we'll catch you in the next week or so.
Absolutely. Bye. Thanks, Naz.
Thanks. Yes,
take care.